This is the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS. Now, Rick Preuss and Lee Cohen, two guys that invite you to rub their bellies. Yeah, go ahead, rub it.
Yeah, this is a story of famous dogs.
It's 9:35, and we're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And Rick, we've been talking this morning about seahorses and just some of the incredible changes that are going on in the whole industry of fish keeping. And we're talking this morning with Vince Rado, who is with ORA down in Florida. And Vince, you were talking about copepods right when we hit the break at the end of the half hour. Can you explain to the listeners what copepods are and why it's an important change in what's about to happen in the whole business of fish keeping?
Yep, sure. Be happy to. Copepods are tiny shrimp-like animals that live in the plankton in the ocean, and they're a very important key link in the food chain, going from tiny single-cell algae, which they eat, and then feeding a whole variety of baby fish and other invertebrates. And it's that critical link in the food chain that's been missing in aquaculturing a lot of the really popular aquarium species, angelfish, for example, tangs, even mandarin gobies, which we would talk about. So the copepods, and there are many, many hundreds of thousands of species of copepods. It's an amazingly huge variety of these little tiny shrimp animals that, like I say, live in the plankton. In the last few years, a lot of progress has been made in how to raise copepods in captivity. And this has made available for aquaculturists a whole new line of larval feeds, feeding the baby fish, which is the really critical point. So we're just beginning to see the effect of this new larval feed, these copepods, coming in to aquaculture. And one of the results of this has been the successful rearing of the mandarin goby, one of the most popular aquarium fish, but traditionally also one of the most difficult to keep.
Sure.
Because they would only eat live foods. So now, with the use of copepods, we've successfully reared that species. And just like seahorses, we've trained the mandarins to eat dry foods and frozen foods so that they're much, much easier to keep in captivity. That's a big breakthrough.
Yeah, I'm going to mention that we now, you know, as customers come in, there's a few animals in the marine hobby that just catch their eye and bring them right into the idea of keeping saltwater fish instead of doing freshwater. You know, the clownfish we all know about, but the mandarin goby and the seahorse are two of those really signature animals that we would always show but never really recommend for anyone that didn't have that perfect environment for them.
Right.
And now we're finding that, you know, everybody that comes in with a little bit of education and forethought can actually keep these particular animals. And there are probably plenty of other animals out there that either A, we don't carry, or B, are taken from the wild that could be now captively reared, that you're hinting on that we're going to be able to bring from our captive situations as opposed to a wild caught situation. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. And that's the whole emphasis here at ORA, is we want to keep moving forward with developing and breeding new species of aquarium, saltwater aquarium fish for the hobby. The entire industry has hit sort of a brick wall because what we've used to this point is a little tiny plankton animal called a rotifer. Mm-hmm. And rotifers have been wonderful for feeding things like clownfish and dottybacks and certain others like cardinals and gobies. But most of the about 1,400 or 1,500 different species of tropical fish that are collected from the wild for aquariums are not able, their larval stages are not able to feed on rotifers successfully. So we need that new larval food, and that's what copepods represent. Now, as this progresses, I think we're going to see, for example, tank-raised flame angels, tank-raised yellow tangs. Many of the really popular, the hepatis tangs, for example, those types of species which have been 100% collected from the wild in the past now are really getting close to being able to breed in captivity for the first time. There's still some difficulties to overcome, but day by day, believe me, we're making progress. So that's very exciting. That's a whole new aspect of the hobby that has yet to be, available for everyone.
I'm thinking, listening audience again, a flame angel. And Lee, maybe you can describe a flame angel. But wow, that would be amazing. And I think that's that holy grail of fish that if it was captively raised instead of taken from the wild, all great possibilities happen. Because I know from a personal response or a personal experience is that they have a relatively high mortality rate going through the distribution process. It's not like some of the other fish that can go through without any kind of loss or issue. Comment a little bit about that, Lee. You know, flame angels.
Well, actually, I'm better off with the yellow tang.
The yellow tang. Okay.
Well, certainly,
we could talk about the yellow tang because it is too a very popular fish. But a flame angel, fluorescent orange red. You know,
right.
It only gets about 3 inches long, and it's intensely red and has blue highlights. You can't find a more beautiful fish on the planet than this particular fish. We rarely see it in good, healthy condition in captivity because of the distribution issues associated with that animal. And Vince, if you're telling me that we're going to be looking at captively reared flame angels, I know if it's anything like your mandarins, which would be, it seems like a much harder nut to crack because they're the more difficult animal to keep once in captivity, then I've got to imagine that flame angels in captive breeding has to be like, you know, the holy grail of fish.
It is one of the holy grails. And there's a lot of work being done with those right now and some other species. But these will also represent the keystone species that unlock the secrets for many other species, okay? The flame angels are in a family of fish called the pygmy or dwarf angels, and there are dozens and dozens of very popular aquarium species. And I can only think when flame angels or another centripyge, that's the name of the fish, the group, gets bred, that soon thereafter there'll be many others available. So we're looking for those breakthroughs, and that's the key. And like I say, the larval feeding of these animals is really where we need to concentrate and look at. And as we develop the methods and the understanding of their nutritional requirements, I think we can say, let's just say this. 10 years ago, as I started with ORA, I would have never imagined, ever, that tank-raised mandarin gobies would have been available. And here we are talking about we have them. So 10 years from now, I don't think that flame angels are out of the question at all.
Well, 10 years ago, I had about 80% of my coral selection taken from the wild, and now today I have over 90% of our coral selections raised in captivity. So we know what 10 years can do, and it sounds like, you know, this is that missing link to really make good things happen on the fish side of it. Because it is one of those things when I'm talking to a customer and I'm telling them 90% of these corals are raised here in captivity, but then I can't really finish the punchline by saying these fish are also animals raised in captivity. So I'm excited. You've got me all going today. This is great.
Well, we were now doing about 40 different species of fish overall at any given time, and that's pretty remarkable. Like I stated earlier, there's almost 1,500 different species of fish that are caught in the wild for aquarium use, and so we have a long, long way to go. So we're excited about it here. We're always moving forward on this development, and I think you all can look forward to new announcements and new species from ORA here next year or two.
Well, Vince, the only question that I've got is, will the medicine and the ability to deal with the bacterial infections that you described earlier, if those advances can take place along with the feeding advances that are taking place, then I can only imagine what can happen in terms of the viability of having indoor environments that mirror what's going on in the oceans.
Well, that is really almost available today. The modern reef aquarium is an amazing mini ecosystem, if you want to put it that way. The varieties of life, the different types of corals, other invertebrates and fish all living together, you can ask Rick, that was unimaginable 20 years ago. It really was. When I first started in this hobby, everything was dead. The coral was dead. It was white bleached coral. That's what we used. And the common belief was, well, you can't keep coral alive.
Right.
Well, that's ancient history now. We've gone so far past that. And the advances just in my lifetime have been remarkable. And I can only imagine that it's going to continue this way. There's revolutions in lighting. There's revolutions in filtration and other techniques. It's and I can't emphasize enough this important missing food chain, the copepods, use of copepods, both in aquaculture for raising larval fish, but feeding your aquarium live copepods. That's what they get
that's
in nature.
We've done it again. We ran to the end of the section, and we'd like to wrap things up because it's just been fantastic, and we've appreciated you being on the show. It's just been great.
We've been speaking this morning with Vince Rado, who works for ORA down in Florida. Thanks so much for being on the show, Vince. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome, guys. Anytime.
It was our pleasure. And Rick, we're going to continue the conversation after the break right here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.